Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here, Head of Marketing at Charity Digital. This podcast recording is from our Be More Digital 2021 conference we held virtually back in March. We had over 1,200 charity professionals join us on the day. We've decided to share some of the best sessions as podcasts. We hope you enjoy, and don't forget to like, rate and subscribe if you haven't already. We have a session from Cubblewell and Davis at the NCSC, which we'll be looking at GDPR 3 years on, specifically where we at now as a sector. So I'd like to hand over to Cub to get this started. Just a quick note on this one, actually, before we jump in. There is no Q&A at the end. Cub was unable to join us, but please do submit your questions, and we're going to get them recorded and sent out with you in the recordings. Enjoy.
Hi everyone, welcome to this session on GDPR 3 years on since it was implemented back in 2018. Come May, it will be the 3 year anniversary. I'm Cub, I'm the voluntary sector lead for the National Cybersecurity Centre. Today on this session, we're going to take you through what is the GDPR and the Data Protection Act 2018. What does GDPR say about security? Obviously, that will be the main focus of us as the National Cybersecurity Centre. And talk you through what are referred to in the guidance as appropriate security outcomes, which summarised there are managing security risk, protecting personal data against cyber attack, detecting security events, and how you minimise the impact of those. And then the last thing we'll cover is what you can do next. So this is a very lengthy topic, a quite complex one, but in the next sort of 20 or so minutes, I'm going to take you through our guidance, the GDPR security outcomes, and what it says about all of those areas. But at the end, we'll point to where you can find out some more information to take this home into your own organizations. So what is the GDPR and the Data Protection Act 2018? The first thing, I will address the elephant in the room, which is we are often asked, well, we've left the European Union, surely GDPR doesn't apply anymore. The Data Protection Act 2018, along with the UK's General Data Protection Regulations, sets out the data protection regime of the UK. That is unaffected by Brexit because it was enshrined in UK law at the time. And it takes a flexible risk-based approach to data protection, data processing, etc. And it puts the onus on the data processors and controller to think about and justify how and why you use that data. In the UK, the Information Commissioner's Office is the regulator of data protection. They are the people who can provide advice on the GDPR and Data Protection Act, and they are also the people whom, if you believe that you have suffered a data breach, you should be reporting to. But I'll come on to that under one of the security outcomes later on. And there are then the seven principles of processing personal data, which I won't go into now just for the sake of time, but they are the sort of fundamental sort of chapters, if you like, of the UK GDPR and Data Protection Act. So moving on from there, the key question sort of today is, what does GDPR say about security? And it says primarily three things. Firstly, under catchily, Article 5.1F, the GDPR requires you to process personal data securely. So Article 5.1F concerns integrity and confidentiality of personal data, which in short is the GDPR's security principle. It states that, and taking exactly from GDPR, that data shall be processed in a manner that ensures appropriate security of the personal data, including protection against unauthorized or unlawful processing and against accidental loss, destruction or damage using appropriate technical or organizational measures, which, as you would expect, is a sort of very legal definition of what it says about security. But it doesn't just stop at Article 5.1F. It also brings up security under Article 25. So alongside the security principle that we talked about a second ago, it makes data protection by design a legal requirement. This was sort of previously known as privacy by design. And Article 25 mandates that at the time of the determination of the means of processing, so by that we mean the design phase of any data processing operation, and at the time of processing itself, so the point in which you process the data, organisations shall put in place appropriate technical and organisational measures designed to implement data protection in an effective manner and to integrate the necessary safeguards into processing. So it also covers data protection by design. And then lastly, and these are just sort of the key areas that I want to just focus in on. Article 32 states that whether you're a controller or a processor, you also have specific security obligations under Article 32, which is the security of processing. And these require you to put in place appropriate technical and organizational measures to ensure a level of security of both the processing and the processing environment. So I just wanted to cover those just to kind of indicate the points in which there are requirements for security. But essentially, those provisions that I've just talked about turn what is considered good security practice into a legal minimum. So they go much further than the obligations of the previous Data Protection Act 1998. We've obviously got the Data Protection Act 2018 now. So quite a big gap between those two pieces of legislation, and it introduces established information security concepts into data protection legislation, which includes the minimization of personal data collected, the managing, limiting and controlling access to personal data, protecting the CIA triad, and by that I don't mean the Central Intelligence Agency, I more mean the information security CIA triad, which is confidentiality, integrity and availability of personal data, which most of you will probably have heard of that triad in relation to sort of data processing. It also includes the resilience of processing systems and services and the ability to restore the availability of personal data in the event of an incident. So if there is a cybersecurity incident or data breach, that you're able to restore the availability of that personal data, because losing it is just as, or losing access to it is just as serious as it actually being stolen. And lastly, the regular testing of the effectiveness of the measures implemented. And that's a kind of key point in terms of today's session. We're 3 years on since the introduction of GDPR. We ran similar sessions to this back when the legislation was brought in. But we're now kind of 3 years on. It's a really good opportunity, I think, at this point to reconsider where you are at with security sort of revisit the security outcomes that I'm going to run through today. So without further ado, I will begin to kind of go into the actual guidance that we have written for this. It was published in 2018 when GDPR came out, and was written in collaboration with the ICO. So it was written as the kind of central UK technical authority on cyber, in support of the regulator to provide that guidance. So first question we'll get asked when I kind of go into them as outcomes is, why don't we just tell you the right thing to do? In short, because there is no one size solution that will fit everybody. The way that we process data, the volumes, the type of data means that you need to take actions that are appropriate to the risks of processing and holding that data. And therefore, we focused on security outcomes, which give a sort of, I suppose the best way is to, they give an idea of where you should be at without being specific as to how you achieve that, in order that you can then shape the mitigations and the sort of risk management that you put in place to shape around the approach that you have to processing data and the sensitivity of the data that you are actually processing. So I'm going to go into those risks. And the other thing I'll just say on that is, it is also about scalability. So the security outcomes allow this approach to be scaled to an organization of any size or any complexity, because they rely on an understanding of the actual outcomes that you're trying to achieve with regards to security, and you can apply different types of guidance, such as if you're a smaller organization, following the Cybersecurity Small Charity Guide would be a sensible route. If you're a much larger one, you may need to follow something like the 10 Steps to Cybersecurity that we've published, or some of our more bespoke guidance if you're processing data in a particularly unique or potentially risky way due to the sensitivity of the data that you're processing. But I'll point you all at that at the end under the next steps section. So the first outcome, if you like, is to manage security risk. And that, as an outcome, essentially means that you have appropriate organizational structures, policies, and processes in place to understand, assess, and manage the security risk to personal data. I think we're all very familiar with that image that's on the screen at the moment, that kind of traditional risk matrix. And this is essentially what this particular outcome is about. So the first thing that we have under this outcome is governance. So you have appropriate data protection and information security policies in place, and if required, that you ensure that you maintain the records of processing activities and you've appointed a data protection officer. That's kind of all that's covered within governance, but that's a really fundamental one, because if you don't get that in place, a lot of the following ones just won't be possible. So the risk management, the management of the risks that you identify. So this is about taking appropriate steps to identify and assess and understand the security risks to personal data. This is often one we see missed quite a lot, where organizations have just sort of taken a blanket approach to all of their data and not actually assessed the potentially individual risks that apply to the types of processing they're doing or the sensitivity of the data. And here it's then about understanding what those risks are, what are the appropriate and not sort of overly burdensome, but also not too simplistic risk management strategies that you can put in place. And there's sort of four bullet points I'd sort of bring to your attention here around what you need to consider under that. So what is the sort of the state of the technology and the what technology do you actually need to have in place to do that? How do you balance that against the cost of implementation? Balancing that against the nature, the scope, the context, and the purposes of processing, and then balancing all of those things against the severity and the likelihood of the risk being realized. And that will allow you to then properly assess the risk of that data being maliciously taken or amended or potentially corrupted, meaning that you no longer have the availability of the data. And a lot of these things can be covered under the data protection impact assessment, of which there's a template on the ICO's website. So the next one under managing security risk is asset management. So this is about understanding and cataloguing all of the personal data that you process, and that you can describe the purpose for processing it. So this needs to be done across all the different types of data that you hold. And that any personal data you process should be adequate, relevant, and limited to what is necessary for the purpose of processing, and that you don't keep it for any longer than is necessary. So that one, obviously not necessarily a specifically security thing, but actually a really fundamental part of good data protection management. And then the final bullet point I'll put under here is around data processors and the supply chain. And this is about understanding and managing the risks to your processing operations that might arise as a result of dependencies on third parties. So whether that's an organization that you use to gather signups to your charity, whether that's an organization that perhaps, say, processes payroll data on behalf of your staff, so that that's an outsourced function within your organization. Could be all sorts of third parties that you bring in for this. But you also need to make sure that they employ appropriate security measures in the processing of that data for which you're the controller. So I won't go into much more detail on that other than to say there is some sort of specific guidance on managing supply chain risks on the NCSC website, which will certainly help in this particular area. The next outcome is around how you then protect personal data against cyber attacks. So the headline sort of outcome here is that you have proportionate security measures in place to protect against cyber attack. And these will cover the personal data that you process and the systems that process that data. So this can be again broken down into a sort of a series of sections, if you like. So the first is around policies and processes. So this initially is about defining, implementing, communicating, and then enforcing appropriate policies and processes that direct your overall approach to securing systems that are involved in the processing of personal data within your organization. And simply, this can also, you know, can simply mean that you have data protection policies in place, that you have policies governing how people use technology within your organization, even down to, for example, how you make sure that policies and processes are in place for managing people who leave your organization. In some cases, that can be one of the most risky times, particularly if somebody is leaving under less than favorable circumstances. We often hear of cases where people have left the organization and taken chunks of data with them or commercially sensitive information. And people leaving is a really important point in which to have a policy and process in place to restrict their access at the point of their departure or during their departure if necessary. And also under this point is where I'd bring in our Cyber Essentials certification scheme. So consider assessing your systems and implementing specific technical controls that are contained within the Cyber Essentials framework. It's a good benchmark in which to consider yourself against under this B1 section. The next thing is identity and access control. And this is a really big topic because it's a really important part of managing who has access to data, how you manage that access, and then how you can control that in a sort of global fashion. But fundamentally, it's about understanding, documenting, and managing access to personal data and the systems that you use to process that data. So, for example, you need to make sure that you can understand and that you understand who you've granted access rights to, whether that person needs access to all of that data or whether they can have access to a specific tier of that data. So, for example, not everybody needs access to the entire CRM database or all of the finance information or all of the HR information in order to do their job. And that's why kind of segmenting data in a way that you only provide access to people who need it, or put another way, the concept of least privilege. So you provide people with the least amount of access privileges they need to be able to do their job is a sensible way of looking at that. It also covers things like how you appropriately authenticate and authorize those users to access personal data. So for example, how do people go about logging into the system to then access personal data? You might want to consider having two-factor authentication measures put on those kind of databases or systems which hold personal data. It will obviously depend on the sensitivity of the data held within and what other measures you've got in place. But also a couple of other things like preventing users from downloading, transferring, altering or deleting personal data where there's no legitimate reason to do so. So limiting people's rights to be able to do things to the data that might be irreversible or that might constitute a data protection breach. And finally, I'll say just making sure you've got a really robust password policy that you enforce across all of your systems to avoid users having weak passwords or those ones that are very easy to guess. So that's identity and access control. I appreciate I'm running through this very quickly, but I want to make sure that I get across all of the key points from the security outcomes for you to then go away and look at in your own time and really digest which ones you need to revisit within your organization. The next one is around data security. So this is around the implementation of technical controls such as encryption to prevent basically unauthorized or unlawful access to that personal data. And the key thing I'll say here is that that data is encrypted at both in transit, so when it's moving from one place to another, but also encrypted at rest, so that if someone were to, say, steal access to the database or steal or somehow gain access to one of your corporate devices, they wouldn't be able to access that data without needing to unencrypt the device by using, you know, a password or something like that. And then also under this bit, considering what you do with devices that you no longer need. So what is your process for repairing or disposing of devices that you no longer need? The next one under this one is around system security. And this is a particularly sort of substantial part of it. So I won't go into kind of too much of the detail of the specifics on this one, but essentially this is about implementing the appropriate technical and organizational measures needed to protect the systems from a cyber attack. So again, it's a risk-based approach, but a couple of typical sort of expected examples of security measures you could take could include the tracking and recording of all assets that process personal data, including so end user devices, so people's laptops, smartphones, tablets, but also removable media, so tracking USB sticks, things like that. If they contain personal data, they should be tracked, whether that's in terms of a sort of manual log of those or in some sort of more technical solution to track that removable media. A couple of other sort of ways, so actively managing software vulnerabilities, so making sure that all of your apps and systems are appropriately patched and updated to the most recent versions, and where that's not possible, that you've taken some other mitigating steps where patches can't be applied. So we quite often, we've seen in the past where people have come to the end of the in support period of a particular piece of software, but where that's happened, they've still got it on their systems, but they've not taken additional steps to mitigate that in terms of perhaps segmenting that from access to other types of data or limiting its use within the organization while you transition to a new one. There's a series of other things that we'd encourage you to have a look at there, but those are just a couple of the sort of obvious examples that fall within that kind of system security piece. And the last one I'll touch on is staff awareness and training. And I think this one's fairly obvious, and I know a lot of organizations do it, but you give your staff, your trustees, your volunteers, and I've specifically called out all three of those because this is relevant to anybody that processes or manages any personal data. And in most organizations, that does cover all staff, all trustees, and all volunteers. That you've given them appropriate training and that you've made them aware of their obligations and the organization's obligations to manage personal data appropriately. We do have on the NCSC website a free e-learning package called Top Tips for Staff. It's available either to use straight through our website, or if you have your own e-learning platform or learning management system within your organization, you can download it and incorporate that into your own system. And a new version of that that's been updated to reflect some of the changes in the guidance since we first released it a couple of years ago will be going live in the spring. So please do keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, the current version is there and available for you to use. So detect security events. So this is the third outcome that I wanted to just kind of draw your attention to. And it's quite simply put that you have the ability to detect security events that affect the systems that process personal data within your organization. So this can be achieved through security monitoring, either by having a system in place or a sort of process for regularly reviewing logs and things like that of your systems. I'll point you at this point towards something which might help some of those organizations which maybe don't have security monitoring software or systems in place already. We have a free to use tool available from the NCSC website called Logging Made Easy. It's a tool that can be used to set up logs on your systems, your devices, your networks, and then produce logs for you that can then be reviewed by someone with the skills to analyze whether there's anything unexpected or indications of a breach of personal data contained within those logs. But the third one is detect security events, which is a really important one in terms of knowing whether something bad has happened and therefore whether you need to report that to the ICO or seek law enforcement support in remediation. So the last of the four outcomes is around minimizing the impact. So the first bit I'll just kind of draw your attention to here is in terms of minimizing impact, to be able to demonstrate this outcome, you should be able to show that you can minimize the impact of a personal data breach, that you're able to restore your systems and services, that you can manage the incident appropriately, and that you learn lessons for the future. And that's then covered off in sort of two points. So the first of which is response and recovery planning. So this is about the steps that you take to define and test your incident management process. We deal with obviously a lot of incidents within the National Cybersecurity Centre and more broadly across the law enforcement community that we work with. And it is a really regular occurrence that organisations may have an incident management plan, a process that they, you know, have written that was great and it was put on a shelf and hasn't been looked at for 3 years. So when they then suffer a cybersecurity incident or a data breach or something like that. They dust the document off, bring it out, and find that actually it's really not relevant now to the way that the organization operates. So what we're now encouraging people to do is to use our, again, free-to-use tool called Exercise in a Box, which is a tabletop cybersecurity exercising platform, which will take you through a series of well-known cyber incidents that you can take your sort of senior leaders through, those that would be involved in responding to a data breach or a cybersecurity attack, work through it, learn lessons from it, and see what you need to change in the future, which takes me very nicely on to making improvements. So if you were to suffer a data breach and then sort of report to the ICO, they would want to be able for you to be able to show that when a data breach occurs, that you've taken those kind of steps to understand the root cause, that you've reported the breach to the information commissioner, and where appropriate, perhaps even to affected individuals, that you obviously know how to report to other relevant bodies. For example, the charity commission may need to be informed, perhaps you've needed to inform law enforcement as well, and that you can take appropriate remediation action off the back of the lessons that you've learned from either your exercising or response to a previous data breach. So I realized that was a very whistle-stop tour through a potentially very complex and sort of deep subject, as it were. In terms of the next steps, I'd really encourage you to check out the full guidance on the NCSC website, which is, if you just put in GDPR into the NCSC website, it will come up. They're the GDPR security outcomes. They'll take you through the full steps and also point out to additional guidance on particular areas that you might want to consider. Once you've had a look at that, review your approach. It's been 3 years since GDPR has come in. I know a lot of organizations have a sort of annual review process, which is great, so please do stick to that. If you're sitting here thinking, actually, I'm not sure we've really done a kind of full root and branch review of our data protection kind of regime since GDPR came in, that might be sort of 3-4 years ago, please do stop, review your approach, and consider particularly also how the change in the way that we've all used technology over the last nearly 12 months of COVID has affected your approach, and whether you need to adapt the processes and policies and controls that you have in place to minimize personal data breaches. And then also please do check out the Charity Digital webinar and podcast series that we've been working with them on. There's a whole series of, I hope, really helpful sessions on particular topics, some of which we've covered at a high level in this session, but we go into a lot more detail in some of those other webinars and on the podcast, including the most recent one talking about the cyber attack that Charity Digital themselves went through quite recently, and a reflection from them on how that went, what it was like, and how they're kind of learning the lessons from that. So please do have a look at that. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope this was helpful. If you've got any other questions, please do visit the NCSC website or get in touch with us through the inquiry form on there. Thank you.